Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this Monday, October 18th, 2010. We'll be taking you up till 8:45 this evening. We'll touch on a little baseball as well if we have time. As the Yankees will be taking on the Rangers, Cliff Lee, Andy Pettit, Game 3 at the stadium. But we'll begin, of course, week number 6, Sunday's action, with our game of the week, and it took place at Gillette Stadium as New England edged Baltimore 23-20 in overtime. New England improved to 4-1. Baltimore fell to 4-2. Very good game. If you're Baltimore, you kind of got to be kicking yourself because, listen, I said on Saturday that I thought New England was going to win this game. But despite that, I still thought that Baltimore was the better team. And I walked away, and it happened the way I thought it was going to happen as far as New England would find a way to win this game. But Baltimore, I still walked away thinking that Baltimore was, without question, the better team. You know, up by 10, fourth quarter, on the road, you got to find a way to close that game out if you're Baltimore. Think about this. Had Baltimore won that game, they would have went to 5-1 on the season. They had already beaten the Jets on the road, Pittsburgh on the road, and New England on the road. Put that in perspective. I mean, that is a big-time resume when it comes to tiebreakers within the conference, within the AFC conference. And home field advantage is going to be everything, you know, between those three heavyweights that you have, in Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and the Jets. So that would have been, that would have been a big-time victory for the Ravens, but they were not able to get it done. Brady wasn't spectacular, but made plays when he had to make them. 27 for 44, had the one touchdown, but was picked off two times. But again, Baltimore was up 20-10 in the fourth quarter. A couple of big plays. One big play in this game that I think turned the whole game around. Number one, New England's defense really stepped up in that fourth quarter. I mean, Baltimore could not move the ball after having some early success the first half, even into the third quarter. Second half, for the better part of the second half, New England's defense was great, especially their front three. And the big play that came in overtime was LeVar McClain committing just a stupid, asinine penalty, pushing a New England offensive lineman, gets a 15-yard penalty instead of Baltimore having the ball up at the 40, they get pushed back inside the 20, all the way back up to, I believe it was around the 15-yard line. They don't get out at home. New England gets good field position, and Brady drives them down the field for the game-winning field goal. Good game out of Deion Branch, who returned after a couple of years with Seattle. 9 catches for 98 yards. And here's what I say about that. I understand that Deion Branch can go to Seattle and be wasted. Because, see, Seattle right now is a joke. I mean, they don't use any of their players, TJ Husmanzada included. But how can Deion Branch, and I understand that he played with the Patriots early in his career, knows the system. You know, you heard all the mushy stuff. It was like he never left, and him and Brady didn't have a love fest, and so on. So he comes in basically with 2 days of practice, 2 or 3 days of practice, and he catches 9 balls for 98 yards against one of the best defenses in the league. When a couple of weeks prior, Randy Moss didn't catch a ball against an average at best Miami Dolphin defense. How is that? I mean, how is that possible? I mean, I don't understand that. Unless New England was had it up to here with Randy Moss and saying, "Hey, you know what? We're not going to throw your ball, so we want you to say something to force a trade." I don't understand it. It's mind boggling. And Deion Branch is nowhere the fraction of the receiver that Randy Moss is. He's not. And don't give me this nonsense that he fits better than Randy Moss. Randy Moss caught 23 touchdowns in 2007 with the Patriots. Please, Deion Branch, that's half of Deion Branch's total of his career, basically. So, you know, I thought about that when I saw Deion Branch putting up those numbers. But again, good win for New England. They did what they had to do. You know, I'm not one of these people who thinks that New England is a legit contender to get to the Super Bowl. I want to see them. They're great at home. They can beat anybody at home. On any given Sunday, they can beat anybody in the league at home. They're, you know, Tom Brady has won now 23 straight starts regular season going, you know, going back to 2000. He hasn't lost since 2006, a home start. So they, I mean, so they're great at home. But let me see New England go and beat a Pittsburgh, beat a Tennessee, beat a Baltimore on the road. Then I'll take them seriously. If that happens, I'm not taking them seriously as a legit Super Bowl contender. Still to come on this latest edition of the NFL Show, we're heading inside the NFC East. Dallas, we have a problem, major problem. The Giants won over the Lions. And Philly has a problem, but it's a good problem. We'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 45 minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. We'll be right back. After the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the NFL Show, week number 6 is almost in the books. Of course, tonight, Jacksonville, Tennessee, trying to keep pace with the Indianapolis Colts for first place in the AFC South. Jacksonville surprising 3-2. I still don't understand how Jacksonville is 3-2. They're one of those teams that just, you know, it's mystifying how they're not any good, but they find themselves fighting for first place in the AFC South. Minnesota in what was deemed as the Panic Bowl, edged out Dallas 24-21. Minnesota improves to 2-3. Dallas falls to 1-4 and find themselves in the bottom basement of the NFC East. It's lonely at the bottom, I'll tell you that. Typical Dallas game. I mean, Dallas, other than the fact that they had a little balance as far as rushing, running the ball, and passing the ball, Dallas commits 11 penalties, 91 yards. They have a touchdown callback on a penalty. They get an excellent celebration on a penalty a week after they on a touchdown with Miles Austin and Williams. They allow a kickoff return after coming out of halftime. That really turned the game around. Personally, I mean, Dallas, I thought was in pretty good shape at 14-7 in halftime. Halftime, they were kicking a little daylight out of Brett Favre, and they seemed like they were well on their way. But Favre comes out with that kickoff. Minnesota goes up 21-14. Dallas will come back to tie, but Tony Romo and pure Tony Romo fashion, classic Tony Romo fashion, throws a deciding pick, which was a great play by E.J. Henderson. He baited Romo into throwing the pick. He disguised, you know, made it seem like he was about to blitz Romo, come on a rush, then drop back in coverage. Romo never saw him, threw the pick, threw it to E.J. Henderson. Henderson got the pick and also got another interception on a tip pass and set up a field goal for the Vikings, which would turn out to be the game-winning field goal. Vikings didn't play well. I mean, they didn't crack 200 yards of total offense. They were outgained by a lot in comparison to the Dallas. Dallas had over 314 yards of total offense. Minnesota just had 188. Favre was efficient but not spectacular. And Minnesota just did enough to win that game and do what they have to do. They find themselves, right now, they're only a game and a half behind Chicago in first place, and Chicago is not that impressive at 4-2. Minnesota finds themselves at 2-3, half game behind Green Bay, which has looked awful in the past couple of weeks. It was, well, not looked awful, but just it's clearly headed in the opposite direction with all the injuries and a lack of a running game. So Minnesota, like, you know, all of a sudden, 1-3, 0-2, is in pretty decent shape as far as that NFC North goes. The other end of the spectrum, Dallas is borderline. Dallas is finished. I mean, if you don't know the numbers, only 5% of teams that ever started the season out 1-4 have even made the playoffs. Forget about winning a Super Bowl. Forget about making a Super Bowl. Forget about winning a playoff game. Only 5% of teams, and I'll repeat for all the Dallas fans out there, only 5% of teams that ever started out 1-4 have made it to the playoffs. And Dallas would not add to that percentage. I can see, you know, Jerry Jones keeps saying that Wade Phillips' job is safe. I don't believe it. I don't think, you know, Dallas goes 1-5, 1-6, 1-7. I think Wade Phillips could be out of here by the halfway point of the regular season. So Dallas goes 1-4, Minnesota improves to 2-3. The Giants get by the Lions 28-20. I called this one in terms of the Lions covering the spread. The spread was 10. The Lions lose by 8, so I'm happy you got one of my picks right. Lions fall to 1-5. The Giants improved to 4-2 and are now tied with the Eagles for first place in the NFC East. The Giants were able to run the ball like they won the ball whenever they wanted to. Ahmad Bradshaw had a big game, 19 carries, 133 yards. Giants as a team had 167 yards rushing. Detroit hung in there. I mean, Detroit, this has been the MO for Detroit all season long. They have battled these tough teams on the road and played them to the end. I mean, Detroit was driving with a chance to tie if they had converted a two-point conversion, but Drew Stanton, who was filling in for the injured Sean Hill, whose arm was broken on a hit earlier in the game in the first quarter, came in and played pretty well. Had a 19-34, 222 interception, a touchdown, and through an interception that wrapped up the game for the Giants. Giants, you know, a whole hum for the Giants. I mean, not overly impressive. Eli Manning was efficient, not spectacular. But the Giants do what they got to do, what they have to do to stay atop the NFC East. Now at 4-2, they have a, I can't even call it a showdown the way Dallas is playing. They have a meeting with the Dallas Cowboys at Cowboys Stadium next week, and they could basically throw dirt on the Cowboys' grave with a win next Monday night. Philadelphia, in one of the most impressive wins of the day, took out Atlanta 31-17. Both teams are at 4-2. Kevin Cobb, big day for him, 23-29, 326, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. Big story in this game, and there were a couple of big stories, but the one that the Eagle fans certainly have to be concerned about is Deshaun Jackson was knocked out of the game on a head with a severe concussion. Head-on-head collision with Dante Robinson. He's had concussions before. Last year, he missed a game or two because of a concussion. Who knows? This one, I mean, he was knocked out cold. I mean, he had no recollection, no memory of the play whatsoever. Who knows how long he'll be out? So we'll see what transpires with that. Jeremy Maclin picked up the pitch in Philadelphia, 7 catches for 159 yards and a touchdown. Philly dominated this game. And this is why, you know, a friend of mine really was high on Atlanta. And I kind of told him, like, you know, calm down, Atlanta. They have a good quarterback. I like their running game, but I'm not. That defense just does nothing for me. And last night was a perfect – I mean, yesterday was a perfect example. Their defense, Philadelphia bullied Atlanta. I mean, they deboed Atlanta, basically. Pushed them around all over the field, 474 yards. Atlanta only gained 293 yards. Michael Turner was hurt to, I believe, 45 yards rushing. They just pushed Atlanta around. The other big story in this game, of course, is Michael Vick and Kevin Cobb. Now, it's a good time to have. You have two quarterbacks who have shown over the course of the season that they're capable of playing well. Vick, again, set out this game with the rib injury. But for some reason, and Andy Reid did not talk about this, of course, after the game, Vic did not show up to the stadium allegedly until 45 minutes before kickoff. It was a 1 o'clock kickoff, and he allegedly didn't get to the stadium until 12:15. And there are also rumors that he didn't get to the stadium even that early. That he didn't get to the locker room until like 12:55. And again, Andy Reid took the Devin Bryant approach and saying, hey, Vic was excused, and he's going to be in the locker room, I guess, getting treatment, and he's not joining the team. It's strange. I can't believe that Vic is dumb enough to risk making millions and millions of dollars, which he's going to make come this offseason, and doing something stupid. I don't believe that. I don't know what was behind him, sort of late to the game. It's a very strange story. Andy Reid coming up. The best thing Andy Reid could have did was, I don't know, find Vic. I don't understand why, if everything's okay, what are you hiding? I don't get that aspect of it, but apparently Andy Reid says that everything is fine. Vic will be the starting quarterback, which is another issue. Now all of a sudden Cobb has gotten hot and playing well after just looking scared against the Redskins basically a couple weeks ago. That they played great yesterday. So now what do you do with that? He says Vic is his quarterback. We'll see as that soap opera transpires. But again, it's a good problem to have two quality quarterbacks. It's a very good problem. I'm sure there are teams that are calling up the Eagles right now trying to fly one of them away. This is not going to happen, but the trade deadline is Tuesday, but I'm sure it seems that they're on the phone looking to get one of those two players. So Philly improves to 4-2, and they are now tied with the Giants atop the NFC East. Still to come on this latest edition of the NFL show, Big Ben returns, and the champs look like the champs. That's still to come in much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL show. Minutes after the 8 o'clock hour. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, on this latest edition of the NFL show, October 18th, 2010, taking you to 45 minutes after, as we look back at week six action on Sunday. Of course, tonight you have Jacksonville and Tennessee. Get to see two of the premier running backs in the whole league, as far as Chris Johnson and Maurice Jones-Drew. Tennessee trying to keep up with Indianapolis atop that division. Both teams, that entire division, amazingly, is at came into the week at 3-2 with Tennessee, Jacksonville, Indianapolis, and Houston. Trying to keep up with Houston as well as they were able to get by to win their game. So right now you have Indianapolis and Houston both at 4-2. Pittsburgh, the return of Big Ben, 20-10 over Cleveland. Pittsburgh improves to 4-1. Cleveland falls to 1-5. It looked like Pittsburgh was going through the motions in the first half. Only led 7-3 at halftime. Then they got it rolling in the second half. Ben Roethlisberger had a good game. 16-27, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, 257 yards. Pittsburgh, that's what they do as far as running the ball. Not so much in terms of yards per carry, but just the rushes. 35 rushes, only 121 yards, but the rushes, the key. The key stat of that line is 35 rushes. They controlled the line scrimmage, were able to basically do what they want. Colt McCoy, put it in for an injured Seneca Myers, didn't look bad. 23-21. A couple of interceptions, which is understandable going against that defense, and one touchdown. So he didn't embarrass himself. Pittsburgh is just a machine. I mean, they toyed with Cleveland. A Cleveland team that had been playing everybody tough, by the way. Played Baltimore tough. They probably should have another win or two under their belts, but Pittsburgh is just that good right now. They improved to 4-1. And on top of that division with Baltimore losing, and Cleveland, of course, falls to 1-5. New Orleans knocks off Tampa Bay 31-6. This is by far and away New Orleans' best performance of the season. They ran roughshod over Tampa Bay. I mean, this was pure domination. This looked like the New Orleans team that won the Super Bowl last year. 475 yards in total offense. Drew Breesy, big game for him, 21-32, 263, three touchdowns and one interception. This game was Chris Ivory. I mean, I have never even heard of this guy. He goes 15 catches, 158 yards. The Saints have over 200 yards rushing as a team. And again, just did whatever they wanted against Tampa Bay. In the two games that Tampa Bay has lost, and they're having a good season, considering how young they are. I mean, and they are the youngest team in the NFL. But they've been destroyed in the two games they've lost to New Orleans and Pittsburgh. So still Tampa Bay, you know, falls to 3-2. New Orleans is tied atop the NFC South with Atlanta at 4-2 as they get back on track 31-6. Miami gets a big win at Lambeau Field, 23-20 in overtime. Miami improves to 4-2. Green Bay falls to 3-3. Big days for Brandon Marshall, 10 catches, 127 yards. Also, Miami was able to run the ball all over Green Bay, 150 yards, not a lot. Basically, doing 4.5 yards per pop, 39 carries. That's the key. I mean, when you're able to run the ball 39 times, that means you're controlling the line of scrimmage, which is hard to do against that Green Bay defensive front, but Miami was able to do that. Aaron Rodgers, I mean, had a good game, 18-33, one touchdown, interception. Also had a touchdown run, went over 300 yards. But the problem with Green Bay, other than the injuries, is, and they have a lot of injuries, let's make no mistake about it. But the problem is, one injury that I didn't anticipate that would hurt them that much is Grant. They missed him a lot worse than I thought they would miss him. They have no running game, and you're basically asking Aaron Rodgers to be Peyton Manning. And as good as Aaron Rodgers is, he's one of the top 7 to 8 quarterbacks in the league. He's not Peyton Manning. You can't ask him to single-handedly win games for you week in and week out against quality competition. And Miami is a quality team. Make no mistake about it. So, again, they're going to have to survive this. They're going to have to survive this little onslaught of injuries and misfortune that they're having right now to stay within striking distance of that division. They should, because nobody's running away with that division. I mean, Minnesota, you know, got back on his feet, but they're still 2-3. Chicago is a bad 4-2. If there's such thing as being a bad 4-2, Chicago's it. They have not been impressive at all. So Green Bay, they can kind of, you know, manage the waters, so to speak, and kind of keep their heads above water. They should be in decent shape heading toward, as they start to get some of these players back, heading towards the second half of the season. But right now, they're in a little bit of trouble as they fall to 3-3. Miami improves to 4-2 as they keep pace with the Jets and the New England Patriots. Seattle takes out Chicago 23-20. Seattle improves to 3-2. Chicago falls to 4-2. Terrible loss for the Chicago Bears. Seattle's one of these teams, and I put them in the same boat as Jacksonville, Arizona, that I just don't. That's the crazy thing about the NFL this year. I don't know how they're 3-2. I mean, you look at this team on paper, Hasselbeck is at the end of the road. They really don't have a running game. I know they got decent special teams with Leon Washington, returned a couple of kicks with against San Diego a few weeks back. But their defense is decent. They are not. I don't understand how Seattle's 3-2, but they found their way. They have found their way to be a 3-2. Hasselbeck had a decent day yesterday, 25 of 40, 242 yards, a touchdown. Jay Cutler in his return from a concussion was not good. 17 39, 290 yards. But the problem was he was picking himself up off the ground too many, a lot. Sacked six times. I don't see how he makes it through a season with that offensive line. I mean, if you are an opposing defensive coordinator or an opposing defensive lineman on another team, you know, pass rusher, you got to be licking your chops if you see the Bears coming up on your schedule. I mean, licking your chops. I mean, they killed this dude. They're not giving him a chance. You know, Seattle does not have, I mean, I know they have Aaron Curry and a couple other guys, Lofa Tupu, who's not the same player that he once was. But Seattle's not going to make anybody forget about the 2000 Ravens. I'll tell you that. But, you know, they keep coming around, and again, this is becoming a major problem with Chicago. I thought they had gotten somewhat control of it in that Dallas game in the second half. As the offensive line was played decently, but it is going bad real quick in these last two games. In these last two games against Seattle and also with the Giants. So Seattle improves to 3-2 on the season, and Chicago falls to 4-2. Houston gets by Kansas City 35-31. Heartbreaking loss to the Kansas City Chiefs, who frankly should have won this game. They were up by 10, by as many as 10 points midway through the fourth quarter, 31-21. Couple of late touchdowns for Houston. Matt Schaub had a big day, 305 yards, two touchdowns. The game-winning touchdown to Andre Johnson, 28 seconds left. Andre Johnson had his typical big day, 8 catches, 137 yards, 38 yards, and a touchdown. A lot of offense in this game. Both teams went over 400 yards of offense. Kansas City ran the ball right down Houston's neck. I mean, over 200 yards rushing. Jamal Charles and Thomas Jones both came close to 100 yards. Rushing, Charles had about 93. Thomas Jones was with 19 for 100. But again, tough loss for Kansas City. I mean, when you score 31 points, have 421 yards of offense and 228 yards rushing, you expect to win the game. You should win the game, but it was not meant to be for the Chiefs, who falls to 3-2 on the season, and Houston improves to 4-2. I still like the Chiefs, though. As each week has gone on, I'm becoming more and more of a believer in Kansas City. Even when they lose, they don't look bad in doing so. I mean, they lose a game at Houston, tough place to play. They lose at Indianapolis, 19-9. Again, another tough place to play, but they're not embarrassing themselves when they do lose. They're basically fighting to the end. And they're going to be right there all season long as far as that division goes, because the next team I'm about to talk about looks clueless right now. San Diego falls to St. Louis 20-17. St. Louis improves to 3-3. San Diego falls to 2-4. Sam Bradford, another good day out of him, 18-31, 198, one touchdown pass, no interceptions. Antonio Gates left this game with an ankle injury, and Michael Floyd also left this game late in the fourth quarter with a hamstring. But San Diego they're Dallas West. I mean, that's a team that just does dumb stuff to beat themselves. They can't stop anybody. They can't stop anybody from going up and down the field. And right now, they're going to keep Kansas City in this race. I don't see any 8-9-10 game race streak this year with the Chargers. Now, they might go on a run. I still have to put them as a slight favorite to win that division, because the division is so bad right now. But I would not be surprised if Kansas City won that division. I mean, San Diego's just awful right now. They're going to get, I mean, they have New England next week. That could get ugly real fast. So we'll see what happens with that as the Chargers fall to 2-4 on the season. Still to come on this latest edition of the NFL show, a first for one of the worst teams in the league. The Jets keep on rolling. And we'll do our second game of the week, which would have been the game of the week if not for the Baltimore New England. We'll talk about why FedEx became Peyton's place. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the NFL Show. I'm your host, Cyril Quick, kicking you 2:45 minutes after the hour. After the hour, as we close out the last three games on this Monday, October 18, 2010, Cyril Quinn taking you to 45 to the quarter of nine. The Jets keep rolling. They improved to 5-1, defeating Denver 24-20. I almost had this game. I picked Denver in an upset. Denver, you know, played well, but, you know, that's a good win by the Jets. Coming off a short week, tough place to play on the road. Easy, it would have been easy to have a letdown coming off the Monday night game against Minnesota, but, you know, Jets found a way, outscored Denver 14-3 in the fourth quarter. Sanchez was okay, had two interceptions, 17-30. Daniel Thompson had a couple of touchdowns, and Jets were able to get a late turnover by Kyle Horton on a play he fumbled. You know, they get a bad snap. He was a bad snap, and the ball bounced all over the place. And he's right there by the ball, and allows a Jet to dive in. I believe it was Lowry, the safety, to dive in, and get the ball. I'm thinking myself, like, you're right there. I don't know if he was scared of the contact, but he was right. He could have dove in for the ball. He could have covered and kept possession. It probably didn't matter in the grand scheme of things as far as with the game. But I'm like, the game on the line, you can't give up the ball that easily when the ball is loose and it's right in front of you. Denver falls a 2-4 on the season. Jets are getting approved to an NFL best 5-1. They have best record in the league, best record in the AFC, of course, and are on top of that division. Just looking good right now. They won 5 straight after struggling in that opening Monday night game against Baltimore. That running game has gotten going. Daniel Thomas has found the youth as he is one of the top rushers statistically in the league right now. I think he's probably, I would say, top 10, top 5, top. He came in top 5, top 6, and so he's definitely a top 10 as far as yards gained, averaging a ton of yards per carry. Has really been, he's becoming a starter. I mean, he's given the bulk of the carries over Sean Green. At the offseason, at the beginning of the season, you know, all this talking about how Green was going to take the place of Thomas Jones and become the workhorse, so to speak, but that has not been the case, as Thompson has performed, has outperformed him, frankly, and is playing at a Pro Bowl caliber level. I don't know how long it can last. You know, he's not a spring chicken, but right now he's playing great. He gives the Jets another weapon in their backfield. San Francisco finally gets a win, 17-9 over Oakland. If they had lost this game, I think Singletary would have been done. I think, you know, losing a home game to the Raiders, I think that would have sealed his fate. Alex Smith was okay. I mean, 16-33, 196, a touchdown. The keys was Frank Gore in terms of what he did, running the ball well. They ran the ball. They had 149 total yards rushing. And I mean, it's probably a job saving win for Mike Singletary. But the bottom line is about the 49ers. And I said this on Saturday's program. They don't have a quarterback. Every game you see Alex Smith and Mike Singletary arguing like a married couple on the sideline. It's like Alex Smith doesn't know, is he gonna take me out this play, this series? How many series do I have left? in my career as a San Francisco 49er. So it's a strange situation with that. You know, Singletary has given him every opportunity to win the job, to be the guy. He says, nah, he just can't play. And I don't know when Singletary is going to come to that conclusion. Hopefully he doesn't lose his job before it. Hopefully he comes to it before he loses his job. But, again, you're not going anywhere with Alex Smith as your quarterback. And that's just all there is to it. But San Francisco is able to get their first win of the season over the Raiders, who are in, frankly, the worst division in football right now. That AFC West, Kansas City has been decent. I'll give them that. They have been decent. But Denver at 2-4, Raiders at 2-4, San Diego at 2-4. That right now is the worst division in football, easily. Even worse than the NFC West, to be honest with you. The teams in the NFC West have been a lot more impressive as far as some of the teams they've beaten compared to the AFC West. So, bad division. Jason Campbell, for you Washington Redskins fans, how about this line? 8 of 21, 83 yards and 2 interceptions. So, I mean, he just stuck up the joint yesterday. As I'm sure Gronkowski gets healthy, he will tickling raids as they started in Oakland. Still to come, FedEx becomes Peyton's place. We'll look at how the Redskins dropped the ball on this latest edition of the NFL show. After the 8 o'clock hour, as we head towards the end of this latest edition of the NFL show, I'm your host, Darrell Quinn. Indianapolis improves to 4-2 on the season, taking out the Washington Redskins 27-24 at FedEx Field, Sunday Night Football. Redskins won a 3-3 as they trailed Dallas. Excuse me, let me get that right. They trailed the Giants and the Eagles 5-1 game in the NFC East. This has been the MO for the Redskins this year. You know, keep it close, take our shots in the fourth quarter, and, you know, roll the dice. I mean, this Redskins, five of the six Redskins games have been decided by 7 points or 6 points or less. They are 3-2 in those games. The other game they played, they got knocked around by the Rams by 14. But, you know, you saw why Peyton Manning. He was an absolute surgeon out there with no huddle. 25-38, two touchdowns, 307 yards. Indianapolis just did whatever they wanted, basically, offensively, 469 yards. The Redskins defense made plays, though. You know, they forced three turnovers. They dropped, again, Carlos Rogers and Khalil Moore dropped about four interceptions between them, right in their hands, plays that you have to make if you're trying to beat Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning threw about a month's worth of interceptions last night. He had two interceptions right now. He'll throw about two a month. He'll end up about 10 or 11, or between 9 and 10. But last night, I mean, the Redskins dropped. I mean, Carlos Rogers dropped two that were just, it was like the ball just, you know, has it in for him. He catches the pass, falls to the ground, and somehow the ground causes him to fumble the ball. I'm hoping for a down by contact and the ground can't cause a fumble, but of course the Calvin Johnson move took a place but not complete the total process of the catch, which, you know, the dumbest rule in NFL history, but that's a better argument for another day. I mean, the Redskins blew too many opportunities in this game. They were right there, and, you know, Indianapolis did what they had to do. A couple things. Number one, Indianapolis might have had the worst clock management in the history of professional football with how they handled their second to last series. They get the ball back. Now, this is after the rushing touchdown, okay? 27-24, about 2:42 left. Redskins have all the timeouts left. and Indianapolis gets the ball back, and instead of running plays, instead of running the ball for a couple on first and second down, they decide to throw the ball. You had three incomplete passes in a row. Don't force the Redskins to use a timeout. And now they leave the Redskins with three timeouts and a 2 minute warning. And I understand you have Peyton Manning in your backfield under center, but you got at worst, if you run the ball on first and second down and throw the ball on third after, let's say it's third and six, third and seven, okay, I understand that. But and at worst, you force the Redskins to use two timeouts. The Redskins probably would have been, instead of the Redskins having three timeouts with about, a little bit over 2 minutes left, they would have had about one timeout with about a minute, say, a minute 30, maybe a minute left. I mean, it was some of the worst clock management. I mean, I'm a Redskins. I'm saying, what is Indianapolis doing? I mean, they left the Redskins with so much time. The Redskins had enough. The Redskins got two possessions. I mean, Indianapolis, the Redskins didn't do anything with the last possession that they had, 4th and 10, I don't know what the pass play was. Donovan McNabb tried to go deep. They turned over the ball down. They stopped Indianapolis 3 straight plays. Indianapolis punched the ball back to him, and the Redskins had the ball back with about 30 seconds left. And Don McNabb almost, and with no timeouts, of course, Don McNabb almost throws an 80-yard touchdown pass to Joey Galloway. If the guy Francisco would have made that miraculous interception, it would have been a 31-27 Redskins victory. It was that close. If that ball is tipped, or he doesn't make that play, the Redskins win that game. So just some awful clock management by Indianapolis, but they get away with the win. A couple of issues with the Redskins. And you have to be over on the big draft scheme of things. You have to be over all pleased your Redskins fan going 2-1 in the stretch with Philly, Green Bay, and Indianapolis. Of course, you have Chicago next week. But two issues the Redskins have. Number one, McNabb has to play better. He's been average this year. You didn't bring him in to be an average quarterback. He's all the same quarterback. He's not average by any stretch of the imagination, but he's played average football this year. Two, it's a joke that the Redskins allow Indianapolis to run for 170 yards. Before Joseph Addai was knocked into the 60s by London West Fletcher, he had ripped up the Redskins 17 carries and 128 yards, including one of the slowest 47-yard runs in NFL history. I mean, if he had any speed, it would have been a touchdown. And that leads me to my next point, no Albert Haynesworth. I mean, if Albert Haynesworth was disinterested, didn't know the offense, and he's on that field, just standing there, Indianapolis doesn't crack 100 yards. And at some point, Mark Sherry has got to swallow his pride and play this guy. Either play him or trade him. I mean, it's either one. He had a funeral last week with his half brother, tragically died in a motorcycle accident, didn't come to practice until Thursday. And Shanahan says he's inactive, says he doesn't know the game plan and conditioning, blah, blah, blah. Like, the guy spent about 8 years in Tennessee going toe-to-toe with Peyton Manning. I would think he would know his cadence as far as some of the bumpy calls that he's making and that offense. I mean, he could have them somewhere. So that to me was kind of ridiculous. You combine that with the injury that Rocky McIntosh suffers with a concussion last week, there you go with your run defense. So in terms of Redskins, so they fall to 3-3, still right there as far as the AFC goes. There's nobody's running away. Indianapolis improves to 4-2. Next week, a couple big games. You have two big games that stand out. Number one, Minnesota at Green Bay. Giants will take on Dallas. Pittsburgh and Miami should be good. Philadelphia and Tennessee will be entertaining as well. And, of course, game three tonight in the baseball with Cliff Lee taking on the New York Yankees. Lee trying to keep his perfect postseason record, improved to 7-0. And of course, he's going up against a guy who's won more postseason games than any pitcher in history, and Andy Pettit, won 19-9, so that should be entertaining and going on as we speak. So tune into that. And again, I will see you the next time on the next edition of the NFL Show. Have a great Monday and have a great